Hi, welcome to the Vaguely Anime Podcast. I am one of the hosts this afternoon, Michael, followed by other Cultured Corner host, Sage.
Hi.
And we're talking about at least movies.
Yeah.
Somewhat.
Somewhat. All completely different.
Yes, that is true.
No through line.
No through line whatsoever, but you know.
They're just movies I happen to watch recently. And
fair,
I have.
When do we ever have a through line anyway?
That's true. But they're movies I happen to watch recently, and I have a lot of thoughts about all three of them.
And also, for video viewers, the Trigun Dark Horse first book for technically just all of Trigun itself, not Max, has released, and I have it now. I've had it for a while, but we were not recording for a
while. But now you get to see it.
Yeah, but now you get to see it. And it's still in its package because I've already read this section of Trigun. So I just haven't bothered taking it out
yet.
You're
like, I might as well preserve it.
Well, it's the same thing I kind of do with comic trades I buy in Omnis, where it's like, because I try to buy Omnis of full runs that I really love, that I haven't read yet.
Right.
I think there's like three exceptions to that. So I've already read them, so I just keep them in the plastic. That way they'll stay nice, and then, you know, one day whenever I go to read it, it'll still be like nice and not dusty or whatever.
Yeah.
Trades, they don't usually come in plastic, so I don't have to worry about it for that. But Omnis, I'm like, if I've already read it, it stays in the plastic.
You're like, must preserve.
Yeah. I don't know. I know that some people have issues with that, where they're like, no, you have the thing, fucking take it out. And like, when I'm like,
oh, I am so pro, just whip it out immediately.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Like even if you're not going to read it, you just...
Oh, yeah. Because even, like, figurines, like, I never keep them in the box.
Oh, I mean, same.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, to be fair, a lot of these stayed in the box, but that was because I had nowhere to put them. And
right.
So it was the easiest place to store them was in the boxes in a closet.
Right.
But until I had a place, I mean, then you could take them out. But, like, I don't know. For books and stuff, I feel like if you're not... Like, if you're not going to actively be doing something with it.
I guess because I don't purchase a lot of books. Like, I kind of just get books, like, bestowed upon me. So, they're always secondhand.
Right.
So, like, what am I preserving? This book that's already been, like, crinkled and, like, flipped through.
I mean, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like with trades, I probably wouldn't keep them in the plastics. Because, I mean, that feels stupider than, like a
right
book.
And if I ever had something like this where I'm like buying it brand new, because I'm me, like I would want to reread it right as I got it, so I would be opening it right away.
Right.
So like no preservation.
Yeah, I mean I might reread it, but because it's been a hot minute since I started reading Trigun, but there's no legal way
to
read Trigun,
which is crazy that there's no like U.S. distribution for it.
Well, at the very least, maybe correction would be like there's no legal way to read it digitally without...
Right.
Like,
you'd have to purchase it
mass
digitally.
Mass purchase, yeah, each thing.
Which is annoying.
Right. So, and I was like, and I'm also, I don't want to buy all the individual things because they're not, they haven't been reprinted in a while. So,
right.
Once I saw this, I was like, all right, that solves my problem. Because I'd read all of Trigun online. And then, but like the thing I was using was just so fucking annoying. And I think I got 5 chapters into Max and was like, I am sick and tired of doing it this way. So I stopped and I haven't read it now for like what feels like maybe a year or two.
Right.
But the Max versions are coming out in, I believe it's either October or November. And then the last one comes out in December. Like I know they both come out before the end of the year. I just don't remember if it's like October and then December or November, December, whatever. So I probably will reread this before I start reading Max again, because I love Trigun. I've never read the comic or the manga, and I was like, I should probably do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway, movies.
Movies.
So, I recently, and when I mean recently, I mean like maybe a week ago, that recently, watched Con Air for the first time.
Incredible movie.
God's
greatest movie, even.
So, I've never watched it. I don't even think I've, like, even really heard anybody talk about it before.
I guess you haven't been part of the boys' ranting and ravings in terms of Con Air discussions.
Maybe not, but, like, if I was, maybe I just didn't realize, you know, like, whatever my head kind of a thing. But Mark was like, oh, my God, this movie is fucking so good. We have to watch it.
Oh, it's incredible.
So we put it on, and it's... Nicolas Cage, fairly young. I cannot take him seriously in any movie role, except for National Treasure. Something about him being like dweeby history guy, I believe.
Which feels usually most people are like, this is not Nicolas Cage.
I just can't buy Nicolas Cage as this like hunky, muscled up. And it's so funny, in like his early movies in like the 80s and 90s when he's beefed up, he's always like really oiled.
To be fair, that's a lot of 90s.
No, I know. I don't know why this was a style back then, that like all the like beefcake guys were like oiled. Same thing in Top Gun.
Yeah.
And like Predator as well. Like they are sweaty.
To be fair, for Predator, I think that's just actual sweat. Because they were literally sweating.
They were actually
in the jungle of like Bosnia or
absolute whatever. Absolute buckets in that movie. It was, I was like, y'all need to calm down.
It's one of the best parts about those old movies is like, if they're in a jungle somewhere, they were usually in a tropical jungle in the middle of nowhere fucking country.
They were uncomfy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Nicolas Cage beefed up, oiled up, the long hair. I will say I enjoyed that movie from start to finish.
Hell yeah.
But I could not take it seriously. It was such a funny movie. I don't know if it's meant to be funny.
I don't know if anyone's supposed to walk out of that movie taking it seriously. Well, at least in today's standards, no one's supposed to.
Like,
no one walks out of that movie going,
that was a masterpiece.
That was a gripping story.
Because it's so funny to me that the movie is trying to do like 15 things at once.
Uh-huh.
But each scene is so like nonsensical and not in a way that I personally think like this is how you structure a movie.
Right.
That each individual scene, I come out of the scene being like, wait, what is going on? And then you immediately breeze into the next scene and you don't get any answers from the previous scene.
Right.
Like, it was wild. And just everything about this movie was incredible. Just contrivance to the absolute max.
Oh yeah. Have you seen the original Tomb Raider, the one with Angelina Jolie?
I did, but like years and years and years ago.
Because it's the same
director. Maybe I have to rewatch it because I don't. The only thing I remember from the original Tomb Raider was Angelina Jolie and thinking she's really hot.
Which is funny because she was never really my type.
Really?
Like I understand she is pretty.
Yeah.
But she's not like. I am not, like, attracted to her. Mm. I'm like, I can appreciate your aesthetic. You are pretty, but I am not, like, attracted to you.
I've always leaned towards, like, slender figures, and she is very slender. So for me, I was like, this is... And it was, for me, tan skin, beautiful eyes, dark hair with the long braid. Like, that's what I want in my life.
The closest I've ever gotten to being like, you know what, I can find her attractive to me.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith?
Mr. and Mrs.
Of course.
Smith.
Of course.
That's the closest
Come
where
on.
I've been like, all right, well.
That's peak Angelina right there.
That movie is so fucking fun. I literally watched
that
it
movie
like
is
last,
so,
last
I
month, 2 months ago.
I used to be obsessed with that movie.
I also used to be obsessed with that
movie.
Yeah,
that movie is incredible. But anyway, Con Air. It was just so crazy, like, watching it, like, the scene where they're like, okay, we're putting, like, the prisoners on the plane, and they're like, okay, read off the, like, call sheet, right? And they're like, yeah, this guy, he did this, and he slaughtered these people, and then it's like, oh, yeah, he's just going out for parole.
Yeah.
And then Steve Buscemi with, like, the full, like,
Hannibal Lecter,
like, getup. And he's just, like, there.
Yeah. He's just weird guy who, well, also did terrible things to children.
Right.
But then at the end of the movie, you're supposed to be, like, chill about what's going on.
Wait, but did he or did he not do terrible? I guess he didn't because the little girl was like, see ya.
To her? No. I don't think he did anything to her.
Right. But he
was convicted of doing terrible things.
No,
children.
I know, but like the way the scene plays out, right? Because I was like, damn, this is getting way darker than I was expecting y'all to get, right? Because it's just him like wandering around.
Yeah.
And then he sees the little girl having her little tea party, and I'm like, I'm scared, right? And
I think that's just the whole point. And then he's actually an alright person. Well, Wrong way to put it.
What's crazy, though, is then it, like, he's there with her at the table, and they're having their little tea party and singing the little song, and then it cuts away to both of them not there at, like, the tea party. So I was like, oh, he definitely fucked that girl up. But then later, she's like, see ya, and I'm like, wait, so he didn't fuck her up?
No.
Which, I mean, would be ideal that he doesn't, but...
Yeah.
I'm like, why would you imply to me that he did?
I think that's just what is supposed to happen.
Yeah.
You're supposed to, it's there to be like, oh, fuck.
I was like, this is so dark and out then, of literally nowhere.
Yeah, and then for one time, he decided not to be a terrible person.
Also, this whole back and forth with Nicolas Cage and the diabetic guy, whose name I don't remember. He was, I guess they were like cellmates and then they were both...
Was that the one by Dave Chappelle?
No, Dave Chappelle was the one who, like, was helping John Malkovich. And then he was flirting with the...
It wasn't Vig Rames, right?
No, not Vig Rames. Yeah, he was also helping John Malkovich. I don't know if he had a name, because Nicolas Cage just kept calling him son, even though neither one of them looks like they're, like, way older than the other, if that makes sense.
I fucking forgot Danny Trejo was in the movie.
He's sure
the
one is. That
gets his handcuffed and gets the hands, his like arms cut off, right? And during like the last act.
Just the one, I think. But yes, yeah. His arm does get cut off.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the exchange with him where he's like, he's reading that he's like going to get paroled, right? And I thought there was, I missed something. Because out of nowhere, Nicolas Cage is like, I've done it. And he's talking in this absurd accent.
The, like, wild southern accent.
Like cartoon southern accent.
Yeah.
The entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was crazy. And also, like, the wife and daughter. The wife, I was like, girl, you are way too beautiful. You could be with literally anybody else.
Maybe he's just packing schmeat.
But the commitment, she literally waited for 7 years.
Well, wasn't he wrongfully accused? I forget.
No, he definitely did it.
What did he do again?
He killed some guy at a bar.
Right.
But it wasn't like the it's supposed to be like, yeah, he did kill him, but the guy provoked him, and he was being real nasty to his wife, and blah, 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 you know.
He defended her honor, and you want her to leave him?
You know what I mean? But yeah, but it's so funny, because the lawyer is like, oh, you'll get a year maximum, right? 7 to 10 years he gets.
Yeah.
Which I was like, wow, you have a shit lawyer.
Yeah.
But yeah, this whole movie was an interesting experience.
It's just so 90s.
It is so 90s. The amount of action, like literally every scene that wasn't an action scene is purely a vehicle to get to another action scene.
It's pure late stage 90s. It's
God. It was just balls to the walls. The
John Cusack, John Malkovich.
You know, like usually most stories you're like, okay, there's the beginning. And then you ramp up the tension to the climax. Mm-hmm. And then you have, like, the aftermath.
Yeah.
So it goes like this, right? In terms of, like, how you're supposed to feel.
Yeah.
This movie is the climax the entire time.
And then when you think the climax happens.
Oh, it just...
It doesn't happen. It keeps going.
It just keeps on going.
You think the plane has stopped.
Yeah.
That's the end of the movie. And then it turns into a high-speed fire truck chase.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Also, the DEA guy.
Yeah, John Cusack.
I was like, you need to chill the fuck out right now. Every scene with him and the other, like, military guy who I can't remember.
Right.
Every time they were on screen together was just them yelling at each other. The entire movie.
To be fair, that's like, right, the marionette mangler. What Steve Buscemi's character was named.
Oh.
To be fair, that's also very 90s.
It was
partners screaming at each other.
They were just yelling at each other every single scene that they had together. And I was like, can y'all have one civil conversation? And like the the guy who was like, that's my agent on that plane and you got him killed, blah, 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 right? This man is bloodthirsty.
Right.
He was like, nah, fucking nuke the plane. And I'm like, this is a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Just launch a nuke at it.
He's like, sir? They're like following them with choppers and he's like, shoot them down.
Yeah. Well, they can't escape, Sage.
The commitment, though. I was like, damn.
He's not going to lose his job over this.
Oh,
kill him.
Oh, my God. But yeah, so Con Air was definitely an interesting experience.
Con Air's great.
That's
a comfort movie.
I feel like it's one of those movies, like, it's the so bad it's good.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I feel like that's a perfect example of that. Enjoyed it start to finish. Great movie. Everybody needs to go watch it.
Yeah, 100%.
Peak Nicolas Cage.
Again, comfort movie. just like, just one of those things where you just turn it on, you're like.
and then for the opposite end of the spectrum, I also recently watched Uncut Gems.
Sure is the opposite end of that spectrum.
Yeah.
Incredible movie.
I was stressed out. Like, not in the way, like, you know when you're watching like a thriller or a mystery and it's like, ooh, you're supposed to feel suspenseful because like anything could happen.
Yeah.
Instead of feeling that way of like, ooh, what's gonna happen next? Watching this movie was like, I really don't want to know. I don't want to see what happens next because every single choice this man makes is the wrong choice.
Yep.
I like even that opening scene.
This is how I win.
This is how I win. Even that opening like scene of like when we're first introduced to Adam Sandler's character and he's just like going throughout his day, even that was stressful.
And that was stressful.
Like, this man lives a high octane life. He was just doing so much, talking to so many people, and like, I don't know why I was surprised that he had a wife and three kids, but I was like, at first I was like, oh, it makes sense, he's irresponsible, he's a gambling addict, like of course he would be dating his like work associate.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he's an irresponsible guy. Yeah. That makes sense. Like, he's got a hot young girlfriend.
Well, you don't want to be banging the person you work with?
But yeah, I was like, yeah, this all makes sense. And then it cuts to him at home with wife and three kids. And I was like, what?
Yeah, he's just a piece of shit.
Oh my God, piece of shit is right. And also, it was the whole movie, I was like, I just know. I was like, I don't know what's going to happen, but he's not coming out of this okay, right? Because I had managed to avoid any spoilers for this movie. I'm very talented, yes. But I was like, I just...
Very talented.
I was like, I just know he's not coming out of this okay. But then, as that scene is ramping up with his absurd bet...
Yeah.
And it's just going in his favor, and he actually, like, you know, got what he wanted... And even the brother-in-law is like, holy fuck. Like, that actually worked out.
Yeah.
I was like, no. No. You cannot give me this happy ending. He clears off all his debts, you know, because that's just not real. Like, there's no way.
It can happen.
I mean, yeah, but, like, the man is so irresponsible and so deep in his addiction that you just know. Even when he has the opportunity, he's got $165,000 in cash.
Yeah.
And as he's trying to convince the basketball player that like the stone is worth it and blah blah blah, and he's trying to like be a salesman, he's selling himself on the concept. And then he's like so high on his own supply, and then he's like, no, we should totes my goats do a bet. Bet all of it.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching that scene, and like as the scene was going, I was like, okay, you got the money, good. Now pay off your debts. And as it was going,
only cowards call it then, Sage.
And as he's like doing this whole speech about how like that's just how life is, this is how I win, all that jazz. When he's like, oh, we should do a bet. I was like, no.
And?
Oh, my God. I was stressed out the entire movie. Even, like, him at the auction, and he's, like, saying to his father-in-law, like, oh, you're going to jack up the price?
Right.
Oh, my. I just knew instantly. I was like, there's no way. There's no way. Like, what? But in that scenario, like, the dad just had $100,000, like, lying around to buy this stupid rock? I guess so, because he did get the rock.
I mean, yeah. But, like, it worked.
No, it didn't.
But, like, because, to be fair, that is a strategy.
Right.
To plant people.
Right.
He just fucked it up. Now, okay, you got to remind me, though.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember the exact ending. Does it all pay off or does it not? I forget.
No, he gets shot in the face.
I thought so. I was like, he dies, right?
Yeah. Because his brother-in-law's goons, one of them is like extra hates his guts.
Yeah.
And he's been like trying to get his ass the entire movie. And you can just see like the level of like anger and aggression like escalating.
Yeah.
Like he literally breaks his nose and then throat punches him mm-hmm. before this happens.
Right.
And then he traps them in his like door.
Yeah, and then he makes the next bet, right?
So he's already having the next bet like worked on, if that makes sense. Yeah. And then once he's like, yes, I did it, he lets them out and just right in the face.
Right, because he does succeed.
Yeah.
But they kill him anyway.
Like, literally instantly.
Yeah.
And then Arno, the brother-in-law, is like, bro, what the fuck? Why would you do that? Like, I just wanted my money back. I did not want him to die.
Yeah.
Also, I do think that's kind of, like, that scene with him watching the game and then, like, the brother-in-law in the box, like, watching him watch the game, I feel like he must realize, like, in that moment, you can see it in his eyes. He's like, oh, this man is severely deluded.
Oh, yeah, but he did do it.
No, it's not even about that. But, like, I think he realizes that, like, it's not just, like, he's a piece of shit. Like, he has a serious problem.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, you can see it in his eyes that he's like, oh, got it. Like, it's not about money. It's not about, like, physical material
items.
It's
just, like, the thrill.
The thrill of the high of, like, the chance to win.
Yeah.
And, like, this idea that, like, if you don't put everything on the line, it's not worth it.
That's why I was like, didn't he get away with it in terms of, because he did make the bet and won. And I forgot that the follow-up to that is he does win, but then gets shot in the head, which is what I forgot.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I'm pretty sure it ends up on top. He wins. Yeah. Which he does. But he just dies immediately.
Yeah. But yeah, that scene, I really, really enjoyed that whole scene. I mean, the whole movie is really well crafted. The
movie's just beautiful, really.
Yeah, it's really well done. And I personally always love Adam Sandler. I know people clown on him because he chooses to make like shit movies.
Yeah, but he just does it to vacation with his friends.
Yeah, he's like, why not just go to a nice Caribbean island or wherever.
Have some hot actor pretend to be my wife.
Yeah, have the hottest, youngest actress be my wife, or Jennifer Aniston, whichever, right?
Yeah.
Be my wife on my vacay, and then I'll shoot a movie.
Everyone gets paid.
Everyone gets paid. I get paid.
And I get to hang out with my friends.
And then I get to put out a movie, and then I get paid again.
Yeah.
It's a win-win. And honestly,
can't fault them.
You can't fault the man. Brilliant business strategy, honestly.
It really is.
But yeah, I've always really loved Adam Sandler movies, and I don't know that I've ever seen him do this serious of a role. I know he's done more serious movies before.
I was gonna say, like, Wedding Singer and Punch Drunk Love are also pretty.
So I never watched those two movies.
Also, you could probably argue like 50 First Dates, but. But
I guess.
But there's the Rob Schneider character, which kind of brings it down.
I was going to say, I feel like, yes, 50 First Dates, he's more sincere.
He as a person is a bit more serious, but the movie around it is still a bit absurd.
Yeah, it's still that, like, definitely, like, ridiculous circumstances.
Yeah.
It's,
like, in the same way that, like, Click is a goofy movie.
Right.
Until, like, the last 15 minutes.
Click pissed me off.
But that last 15 minutes.
When I.
Or however many minutes
no,
that is.
I know
is.
Exactly what you're talking about. Because when I was watching. I watched that movie like years and years and years ago.
Yeah, I
now.
Loved Click as a kid.
But I. The whole movie was like, okay, I understand what's going on. And then the last, like you're saying, 15 minutes where they just give you this emotional gut punch. I was like, this is not what I signed up for. Click is the opposite of Up. Emotional gut punch in the last 15 minutes versus the first 15.
But it's like, you watch Click and you're like, he can act?
No, watching that last 15 minutes, I was like, why is this suddenly the most depressing thing I've ever seen in my life?
Him slapping himself when he's like, look at your father.
Oh my God.
And then he's just like dying and he runs out to his kids and he fucking falls to the ground. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh my God, what the fuck?
I'm like, why am I being traumatized right now?
Yeah, but like, so yeah, I guess 51st Dates, it's like, it kind of is, but really isn't. Although I did watch that movie for the first time recently. Mm. Also Wedding Singer, and they're both quite enjoyable. At least I quite like them. Wedding Singer is a bit more serious than 51st Dates. Because it's like his first, like, more serious role that he did. Because it was like early on.
Gotcha.
Adam Sandler. It's the first one with Barrymore.
Oh, Drew Barrymore?
Yeah, yeah, because she's the one in 51st. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's their second.
Gotcha.
And they have fantastic chemistry in Wedding Singer. And then Punch Drunk Love, which I literally watched yesterday for the first time ever.
Oh, how funny.
Is a movie.
A movie?
That I watched that hurt my soul.
Okay,
so you know how I am. I hate cringe, right?
Yes.
Like, I can't handle cringe in any capacity.
You're aware. I'll tell you about cringe in a second, okay. But yeah.
So, Punch Drunk Love has, like, 80% movie cringe.
Ugh.
But it is such a beautifully made film.
Mm.
Like, visually immaculate. Character acting, amazing. Like, I gave it a 4 out of 5, but I was like, if this wasn't as pretty and well acted as it was, this would be like a 2.5, like a 2. Like I was like, stop talking, get off the screen. But like, everything else about it is so immaculate that I'm like, I get why so many people love it. If you can handle cringe, which I don't remember, I don't know if you're good or not with cringe.
I think I'm pretty good with cringe, but I was actually... Mark wanted me to watch this movie called Superstar.
Okay.
And that was a level of cringe I personally could not withstand.
Have you watched The Office?
No.
Okay.
But again, I only watched... I think for this movie, I only made it through 20 minutes because I was like, I am physically in pain.
Will Ferrell?
I think he is in it, yeah.
Okay.
But he's like fairly young. If I remember correctly.
Sky Corgan, Jesus.
But yes, it was definitely cringy. I was cringing.
It's like a 90s movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think it's, I guess, primarily a comedy.
Yeah, it seems like it's what it is.
But yeah, anyway.
But yeah, you should watch that movie. It's good. And if you can handle cringe, then you'll be fine. It's just like, it's such a wild ride.
Gotcha.
It's because it's a Paul Thomas Anderson movie. So it's like insane. But like, there's a whole thing about it where, when he was writing the movie, he was like, Adam Sandler is going to be the perfect one for this role. And Tom Cruise told Adam Sandler about it because his movie before Punch Drunk Love was Magnolia, which Tom Cruise was in. And then Tom Cruise was on SNL and was like, hey, Paul Thomas Anderson wants to make a movie with you. Like, you should do it. And he was like, I saw Magnolia. I don't think I'm the guy for this guy. And he, like, called him up. And he was like, you should not hire me. Like, I cannot be what you want me to be. Mm-hmm. And Paul Thomas Anderson was like, no. You can be exactly what I want you to be. And I think you just need to give it a shot.
Right.
So, like, because it's widely considered his, like, first, like, serious role.
Right.
And, oh, God, it's just, like, brutal. The movie just hurts to watch.
Me too.
Yeah, hurts to watch sometimes.
Mm.
But, anyway.
Anyway. Yeah, Uncut Gems, I was stressed out the entire movie.
It's anxiety the entire time.
It really is. Beautifully shot.
Yeah.
Like, I really like the almost entirely cool palette, but it wasn't like that blue filter, like 2000s kind of look, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it's like a glowy blue.
Yeah.
Like a neon blue is kind of around.
Yeah. I was just like, bro, make one good choice. One good choice.
But he did. He won. He won the bet.
But does it matter if you win if you instantly die?
He didn't know that.
I guess that's fair. But yeah, that was a really good movie. And then now I'm going to talk about a not very good movie. Not even in so bad it's good.
All right, while you explain this, I'm going to walk over there to get my water.
Just bad. So Netflix recently just put out the movie for The Uglies, which was a book series in the early 2000s. It was like a YA book series. I read it, I think, in middle school, and I really enjoyed it. And I kept thinking that they were going to put out a movie series for it, because this was right at the time that like Twilight was coming out, Hunger Games, Divergent, Maze Runner, all those like YA books that were getting turned into movies. So I was like so excited. I was like, hell yeah, we're gonna get an Uglies, you know, franchise as a movie.
What a name.
And yeah, that did not happen, obviously, in the 2000s. Why? I don't really understand why they decided now was the time.
Because now all the YA books were done, and they were like, this is our time. We can capitalize now. No one else is making them.
I guess, but like,
I'm going to be honest, I made that up, but it feels like that could probably be somebody's logic.
I guess, but it just seems like kind of random. Maybe because like the 20th anniversary is next year. I'm not like, you know. But yeah, so I don't really know why. Apparently it was supposed to actually come out earlier, but then there was a bunch of like delays in production. And there was like, you know, they couldn't like land on anything in terms of like visuals and like, you know, the overall story. And supposedly, I don't really remember the first book super well. Actually, I don't remember most of the books super well because I read them when I was 13. I remember enjoying them, but I do know that there was some weird changes in this movie that I was like, why are we doing this? You know?
Right.
And yeah, the way Con Air is the climax the entire time.
This is the inciting incident every time?
It's not even the inciting incident every time. It's like the movie requires you to have full knowledge of the book to even make sense. Because one, it moves at a lightning pace. It's 90 minutes. But there is no break in between anything. There's no breathing room.
Okay.
Like, the movie opens and it's like voiceover, like exposition, which I don't really mind if movies do that, because in terms, especially for this, like they have a lot to get through in terms of like world setup.
Right.
So I'm like, yeah, fine, whatever. But then they do more exposition. Like,
okay,
5 minutes later, but instead of like a voiceover exposition, it's like the main character just saying things. And I'm like, okay, but why did we do that? And then so the movie opens with this exposition, and then it's these two people, Joey King and some other guy who I don't know his name. But anyway,
the Steve.
Who's Steve?
No, that's not. Joey King is not Steve Arrington, right? No, Joey King's the girl.
Joey King is a girl, yeah.
The one that looks like she's like 12.
Yes, very young face. But anyway, so Joey King and then some guy whose name I don't remember, but they're like BFFs. She's Tally, that's the main character of the book series. And then he is Paris, who's like her BFF. But in the beginning of the actual book, he's already not there. So basically you have Ugly Town, which is basically everybody who's under 16. So you just go to school and whatever. And then you have Pretty Town, which is when once you turn 16, you go to Pretty Town and then you get plastic surgery and you get like beautified. And then you get to live like a party life.
I already hate the premise of all of this.
The whole point...
This is immensely YA.
The whole point is that Pretty Town is a way that when they do the surgery on you, they also, like, brainwash you so you're compliant and you don't, like, fight the government.
Mm-hmm.
And Ugly Town is basically just propaganda for Pretty Town being like, well, in X amount of time, you can be beautiful too, right? Because, like, you want to aspire to be beautiful, even though literally everybody... The whole point is that everybody looks perfectly normal. Nobody is truly ugly. But because everyone in Pretty Town is, like, plastic surgery out the ass, think, like, Instagram, you know, filters, all that stuff.
Right.
That kind of look. Mm. Like, unattainable beauty, if you will. So... The movie starts off with them having a conversation, and it's instantly like we literally just met these two characters, and they're instantly going in for that, you know, like midway or even like 2/3 through a movie where like the two love interests will be like, well, maybe, you know, we feel something mutual for each other kind of a scene, right? So that's what you would expect 2/3 into the movie when right. they've built up their relationship and we understand who these people are. No, we have that right at the beginning. With these two people who we don't know who they are or what their relationship is, other than I've been told that they're best friends.
Well,
but then immediately after that, Paris goes and fucks off to Pretty Town because he's turned 16 3 months before Tally. And then she's getting pressed because he is not texting her back. And then she manages to sneak into Pretty Town. And she so conveniently finds a mask that somebody dropped that like alters her appearance.
Okay.
Everything in this movie is a contrivance. It's ridiculous. And then she is talking to him on a roof. And then she gets detected that she's like not supposed to be in Pretty Town. So Paris is like, all right, bye. And he's like, yeah, good luck. See ya. So then she is trying to escape and just happens to find bungee jackets. Literally, they're just chilling on the roof. I'm like... In the book, he helps her because he remembers her and he's like, oh, here, like, this will be useful for you in your escape. Now, in the movie, he's just like, all right, see ya.
I was going to say, like, how accurate to the book
is this movie? Because it's weird to me because Paris is supposed to be a potential love interest for Tally, but he's a huge piece of shit this entire movie. And I'm like, if you want him to be appealing, like, just make him more like how he was in the book.
Right.
Because he was an appealing choice there. And then her second...
Is he the final choice?
I honestly do not remember. I think she goes with David at the end, but I could be wrong. But anyway. Then, so she uses the bungee jacket also.
I don't know what the fuck his name was. Whatever.
Fucking hate Gale. But anyway. Honestly, you really can't... Honestly, Paris in the movie is probably worse than Gale. In the book and in the movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Fuck Gale.
Like, Gale, he's petty and, like, a little bitch the entire time. But Paris, he's actively an asshole.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
But anyway, she also has... And I hate when people say this, but it's very true in this case. She is such an obvious Mary Sue in this movie, which I don't remember her being that in the book. Like, she still struggled in the book a little bit.
Right.
But in this movie, like, this girl, she can do parkour, and she is a fucking, like, Olympic-level athlete with the stunts she's doing. And then, so she's trying to escape Pretty Town, and she gets almost there, but then one drop, like, so she's on a bridge, right? Like, on an underpass of a bridge,
mm-hmm.
and there's, like, a hovercraft, and she's, like, hiding from the hovercraft, and then something falls into the water, like a little bloop. And the hovercraft turns around, and I'm like, because a bloop in the water, you don't got no fish.
You couldn't.
You don't have.
You heard that over the
hovercraft? Over the hovercraft. Like, it literally makes no sense. They made choices, and then they kept breaking their own internal rules that they set up, which was really pissing me off.
I love when movies do that.
But then immediately after this hovercraft situation comes up, we meet somebody else named Shay, who is supposed to be like cool and edgy, right? And she's got a hoverboard. Imagine a skateboard, but, you know, a hoverboard. Mm-hmm. And so she's like, oh, I'll help you escape. She's randomly just there. She's like, I'll help you escape. Hop on my hoverboard with me. And they fly away on the hoverboard, right? And then we cut next immediately to another scene of them. They're now BFFs.
Okay.
I'm like, you guys need to slow the fuck down. So now they're BFFs, and she's teaching her how to use a hoverboard.
Okay.
And then they have, like, a training montage of her on the hoverboard, but the training montage is literally she falls off once, and then the rest of it is her doing tricks. Okay.
Sure.
And then we fast forward again to, like, the day before she's supposed to go to Pretty Town.
Okay.
And apparently Shay, her, and Tally have the same birthday, so they're both supposed to go on the same time.
Convenient.
But Shay, the day before, is like, no, I don't want to go. I don't feel like I need to do that. I feel like I look great, like, blah, blah, blah.
Can you make that choice?
So I'm going to run away to the smoke, right, which is outside of Ugly Town, which is, like, essentially, like, think not really a rebel group, because they're not actively fighting Pretty Town. I mean, they kind of are, but not really.
Can I be so honest? Town and Pretty Town annoy the shit out of me every time you say it. Couldn't think of anything about else. I mean, like, it's just like, I get in a lot of YA novels, it's not meant to be subtle.
It's not.
But oh my god.
Anyway, so for some reason,
I don't know how people like these books at some point in their lives.
Okay, so supposedly in the context of the movie, it's been 2 months since Shay and Tally met each other.
Okay.
So all this hoverboard training is supposed to happen in 2 months, but it does not feel like that. It felt like literally yesterday. There is no time to breathe.
Awesome.
So she out of nowhere is like, yo, Tally, come with me. I will show you the smoke. And Tally's like, sure, why not? They go take this arduous trip. Like, based on how the movie is showing me, this could have been days.
Okay.
This is a fucking, like, marathon hike they're doing.
I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense if they're able to stay out of the hole.
Yes, that's not the problem. These girls are doing this trip easy peasy. No problem at all. Walk 100 miles... in a day, you got it. No issues at all.
Bro, have you not heard the song? You know, the I will walk 100. That song?
Get out of here. But anyway, so they do this trip. No problems at all.
All right, whatever. I thought it was funny.
And then they meet David, and he's just like, hey, what's up? And then Tally's like, yeah, I gotta go. So then she goes back to Ugly Town. And I guess Shay goes with her. I don't remember. This movie is absurd.
How long is this movie?
90 minutes.
You don't remember all of this happening in a easy breezy 90 minutes?
You would think it's easy breezy, but when I tell you this, everything I've just told you is in the first 15 minutes. First 15 minutes. They are just rapid fire through these plot points.
What is this, all of the books in one movie?
No, it's the first book with changes.
Like how far into the book are these things? Like, are you, like, halfway in the book, or is it still, like, the first, like, chapter in two?
So, if I remember correctly from reading the book, which is way better paced than this, if I remember correctly, they don't even really... they go to the smoke, but Tally doesn't entertain, like, joining the smoke, I don't think. Or she does want to join them, but she's not, like, integrated with them.
But, like, do you remember how, like, far into the book that is? Like, if it's early on, if it's not early, middle?
I couldn't tell you. I read these books when I was 13.
Right.
You know?
I'm just because first 15 minutes for all this seems a bit insane.
It is insane.
But, like, if it's in, like, the first chapter or two of the book, then I guess it makes sense, kind of.
No, this is, like, rapid fire. Because they do so many things. Like, they show us the special circumstances in Pretty Town, which, if my memory serves right, we don't even learn about that until the second book.
Mm.
Because they have a third squadron of people called specials, which is, like, more elevated pretties, but they're also, like, government agents and, like, supposed to be, like, super spies.
Sure, why not?
But yeah, so they meet David, blah, blah, blah. Who cares? She goes back to Ugly Town. and she's supposed to get her surgery the next day. Then they're calling everybody like, okay, Lucy and Jordan and whoever, come get your faces peeled off, right? And then it finally gets to Tally, and she's like, all right, I'm ready to go. But instead they're like, oh, go meet the chancellor, whatever.
Sure.
And then the doctor, whose name I can't remember, but I know it's Laverne Cox, which they gave Laverne Cox literally nothing to do in this movie. And I was like really hoping for some evil like monologuing going on.
Right.
And we got none of it. Actually, everybody in this movie gets literally nothing to do, which is really funny to me. And the CG looks really bad.
And in what way?
You know how like the running scenes in Twilight look really goofy?
Yeah.
It's like that.
Ah.
Yeah. But yeah. They're like, oh, we couldn't find Shay. And now you have to help us to go get her ass back here. Do you know where she went? And then she's trying to be like, oh, I don't know. Okay, yeah, I'll go help find you. Because then they're saying, we'll withhold your surgery if you don't help us. Right?
Right.
And at this point, her whole thing is that she wants to go to Pretty Town and be pretty.
Because she doesn't think she is.
It's not really that she doesn't think she is. She's been indoctrinated her entire life to think that if she doesn't have this surgery, she'll never be beautiful.
So she doesn't think she's pretty.
The desire for wanting the beauty is stronger than her thinking she's not pretty, if that makes sense.
Right.
The desire for the potential of being more beautiful is larger than
actually
if she thinks she is attractive or not.
Right.
Because this is basically what every person wants, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like the pinnacle. So she goes and helps them, and Shay writes her these like vague ass instructions on how to get to the smoke. And they specifically say the hoverboard, right? They're like, oh yeah, the hoverboard works on a magnetic grid. And in Ugly Town, everything is magnetic, so you're good to go. But once they go outside of the Ugly Town, there's just in nature. So Shay is like, oh, it's okay, because if you go through the river, then you're good to go. It's like, okay, I guess that makes enough sense. But then they immediately break that rule, and she's just using the hoverboard over not magnetic things. And I'm like, okay, but you just told me that it works on a magnet system. So you can't tell me that she's going to be A-okay flying over nothing. And then they have this whole thing where they're trying to be cool and like have her like riding the hoverboard on a roller coaster. Mm. Which I'm like, yeah, I guess that's fun. But like also, you are wasting your time, but you're also completely rushing through everything. Like, you're choosing the wrong times to be like, ah, let's take a pause now. Let's take a pause in storytelling where it doesn't matter at all.
It matters, Sage.
Oh my god, this movie was infuriating. Everyone's line delivery was completely flat. The visuals are also completely flat. Like, I get it. Ugly Town is not supposed to be, like, fun. But they made everything gray.
Well, yeah. But don't you see that gray is a representation?
I could fucking stab myself. At least in Hunger Games, they were like, yeah, muted color palette. But it doesn't need to be gray. You know? And here's another thing. Pretty Town is supposed to be where everyone is so, like, unbelievably beautiful that, like, you can't comprehend the beauty, right?
Right.
But they make everyone look like off-brand, like, capital citizens. And okay, they don't look that good. And the styling choices are really bad. Like, Paris, her friend, when he gets prettified, he literally looks worse.
But it's not about it actually being prettier, Sage. It's about what the meaning behind it is.
I understand.
Do you? You're the one questioning it, Sage.
I'm questioning the design choices.
There's
because they're bad.
There's a deeper meaning behind it all.
It was just infuriating to watch the whole movie. And then out of nowhere, Tali is like good at hand-to-hand combat and running away and parkour and just has every skill in the world. I'm like, damn, girl, like, what are you learning at school?
Well, I thought we already knew that she was great at everything.
She just keeps being great. There's no teaching her anything.
Mm.
And then they introduce... So David's supposed to be her other love interest.
Right.
And David... I don't know if they say how old David is, but he seems like a whole adult. And I looked it up. His actor is 32. Which, like, yes, handsome man, whatever. But, like, is David also supposed to be 16? I can't imagine. No, that doesn't make sense. He'd have to be at least a little bit older.
Right.
But, like, why? And I see no reason why David would be interested in Tali either. Like,
she's hot.
He's instantly just like, oh, let you, a stranger, into our group. Our super secretive group. She's and tell hot. You all of our secrets.
That's probably the answer.
Like, it's ridiculous. But yeah, that movie was really bad and very unsatisfying.
I believe you.
The 20-year wait was not worth it.
Well, maybe it would have been better if it came out earlier.
Honestly, the movie feels like a 2000s movie.
Right.
Just with like 2024 HD cameras. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I think actually if this had come out in 2005, people would not be hating it as much.
You know, I believe you.
Yeah.
Sorry, I've been like looking up facts about the movie and stuff, and then also like stuff I was watching.
That's fine.
Well, in a side note then.
Yeah.
Have you ever watched the Spy Kids movies?
Of course.
Oh, hell yeah. Okay.
But I've only seen the first three, nothing past that, because okay. Those are the only ones that matter.
You're right. So I watched in one day, I don't know why, I woke up at 9 and decided I'm going on a journey.
I'm going on a journey.
So I decided to watch all three Spy Kids movies. Oh my God. And then I went, all right, Spy Kids 4 has Junie and Carmen in it, so that's canon, so I'll watch 4. And then I watched 4. And then I went, well, that was terrible. I need to cleanse my palate with more child nostalgia spy stuff. So then I watched both Agent Cody Banks movies.
Oh, those movies are so
also
good.
Also in the same day. So I watched 6 movies in the same day because they're all an hour and a half.
That's a lot of movies, bud.
And it wasn't even that hard.
I mean, I guess it's fair if you just like have them going.
So, all right. So let me break this down for you.
By all means.
Spy Kids 1.
Oh, sorry. Also, I just want you to know that Ugly's got a 15% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Hell yeah.
Which I usually don't follow, like, critics' reviews things, because I'm like, I'll just make my own opinion.
Usually I follow
But audience. Ouch.
Yeah, usually I follow audience reviews.
Yeah.
But, so, Spy Kids 1. Banger of a movie. Effects don't hold up. But banger of a movie. Like, it's still fun. It has like some childish humor, but like really like one or two throughout the entire movie. So like you can just kind of excuse it.
Right.
The fucking soundtrack slams.
Is 2 the one with the thumb people? I mean,
no, that's 1.
1, that's what I meant to say.
Yeah,
sorry.
1 has Floop and the that's where like I assume at some point in our lives of knowing each other, you've heard me do the, like the, who, what, when, where, why, how, that whole thing. Cause he has a whole song, Floop has a whole song about that. That has been ingrained in my brain forever. So anytime somebody says like any of those words in my brain or externally, I will sing that in my brain or say it out loud.
Right, right, right.
Because I'm broken.
It's fair.
As you are. And anyway, first movie still holds up, still super fun. Totally could watch it today and still have fun with it.
Right.
Second movie, also the same. I realized this with both Spy Kids and Agent Cody Banks. For some reason, the people making the themes for those two movies went off, like for no reason, but banger of themes.
in the second one, they introduce Emily Osment, right?
Yes.
And she has like the helicopter ponytails. Yep. I was obsessed with that when I was a kid. The helicopter ponytails.
I used to think Alexa Vegas was the hottest person on the planet as a kid.
Of course.
She's still attractive. Of course. But as a child, looking at her, I was like, oh my God, this is the hottest a woman's ever been.
6-year-old me was like, that's eye candy.
Yeah.
Right there.
100%. And then in the second movie, at the credits, she has her whole song and dance number.
Yeah, which comes out of literally nowhere.
Yeah. And you're like, wow. Like me as a kid, I was like, wow, this is so hot.
This is incredible.
This is the greatest thing to ever happen. And now as an adult, you're like, this feels a little weird.
Yeah.
But also great, has the insane line of, do you think God too stays in heaven for he too is afraid of what he's created? Which just insanely deep line out of nowhere by Steve Buscemi of all people.
Oh my God, I forgot Steve Buscemi is in there.
Also Bill Paxton.
Oh my God.
Also the girl that played Cindy Who in
Taylor Momsen?
Yeah, the one who's a singer of some metal band or whatever the fuck she's in. Yeah. She's also the president's daughter.
That's her band.
Yeah. She's also the president's daughter in the movie.
I forgot that completely.
Yeah, she's like the blonde sweetheart.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Yeah, and she also does ballet in the movie with Junie.
I feel like I remember that now that you're saying that.
Yeah, they're on like a dance floor.
Yeah. They have a whole routine.
Yeah, because apparently the actor that played Junie also had been doing ballet since he was like 3 years old.
I feel like I remember that so distinctively now that you said it.
Yeah, they have like their whole little thing. Fucking Gary Giggles has the stupid laugh and Carmen's like in love with him. Gary and Gertie Giggles.
Oh, oof. God.
What terrible names.
Could you imagine? You just know they got bullied.
Spy Kids 3, not great.
Not great?
Does not hold up at all.
No, I know he probably looks horrible now. Terrible. But come on, that movie was the shit.
So, I know, because I actually thought it was bad even as a kid.
Really?
I thought 3D, even as a child, was stupid.
Okay, I never watched it in, like, 3D.
Oh, I did.
Because I only ever saw it when it was airing on TV.
Okay.
So, airing on TV, and when I say TV, I mean, like, the no HD.
Yeah.
Pixelated but as it, fuck
it,
TV.
It's like...
So, it looked good on there.
It's that, like, it goes from they were on practical sets to some extent or on location to they are entirely in CG world. So everything's green screen. Nobody's really, like, acting.
Right.
So, like, it just immediately hinders the movie.
Yeah.
But that movie has so many random people in it. It has
Selma Hayek is in it?
Yeah, she is. She is in the movie. Selena Gomez's first role past Barney.
Really?
Yeah, she's the girl in the beginning that like is wants to know why the water park is shut down.
Oh,
that's Selena Gomez.
Oh my God,
her only credit before that is the Barney.
Right.
One. Also has Glenn Powell.
Oh my God, is he the guy?
No, he is not. The guy is Elijah Wood.
Oh, right.
Glenn Powell is the guy that when Junie gets sent to the moon.
Oh, my God. I forgot the guy is Elijah Wood. That's a crazy fact of life.
When Junie gets sent to the moon to, like, the Battle Royale
thing. Oh, my God. Yes.
Glenn Powell is the dude that's like, all right, you got to fight on a mech. Get on the thing.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
He's in the movie for, like, 5 seconds.
You know Glenn Powell is only 35?
Really?
In my brain... I'm like, this man is at least 45.
Oh, no, I didn't think he was that old.
Not that I think he looks old.
I was going to say, that man's hot.
No, he looks great, but he's just giving me, like, more mature.
Gotcha.
In his looks.
I'm so happy that he's, like, becoming the next Hollywood. Because he gave me a Hollywood action movie to get. And, like, Twisters, fantastic. This is the blockbuster.
I don't know if it's a hot take, but Glenn Powell, his face looks very punchable.
No.
Like, I think he's handsome, but there's something about, like, when he smiles, like, he's trying to do, like, the coy, like, shy boy smile. I'm like, you just look like such a fucking asshole.
See, I think he looks fine. I think Colin Jost has the punchable face.
Colin Jost also has a punchable face.
But
in a different way. Colin Jost gives me, like, smug, like, he knows something. Punchable face.
Right, Anthony?
But Glenn Powell just gives me, like, you just seem like a frat boy punchable face.
Right. I didn't realize we were at an hour. I should have started this conversation in the second episode.
Wow. It's fine.
We can't, like, continue the conversation, can we? No, that's a week apart.
Yeah, that's weird.
But I have so much more to say about these movies.
About Spy Kids?
Yeah, yeah, because there was a whole, like, line I was getting up to.
Oh.
I was, like, building up.
Well, then just say it.
Now I have to condense it. Anyway, okay. Spy Kids 3, not all that great. Especially anymore.
Spy Kids 4.
Spy Kids 4 is so terrible that it actively made me go back to 3 and go from giving it a 2-star to a 3-star. Because I was like, this movie made me realize what these movies could have been because it is fucking toilet humor every 5 seconds. Ricky Gervais is in it. His character is fucking annoying. The children are terrible actors. Everyone in it doesn't give a fuck about it. Robert Rodriguez only did the movie because he was contractually obligated to. And that's why there is like almost 10 years between 3 and 4. Because he just didn't want to do it. Mm. And he was so sick of working with the Weinsteins because they screwed him over so many times that he actively went, I am going to make this movie fucking terrible. So that way they make no money. But I'm going to make sure that everybody gets paid a lot of money who's in this movie so they all don't have to actually suffer from the movie being bad.
Right.
So he just made sure everyone made a good amount of money from being in it and then made a terrible movie. But it is fucking horrendous. The only good part about it is the fact that Junie and Carmen show up again. And that's really it. Their characterization's also not, like, fantastic, but it's just the fact that you're seeing them and they're older now and I'm okay with this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is so bad.
I'm glad I never watched it.
It is fucking horrendous. It is a 0.5-star movie.
Oh.
It is, there's nothing really redeemable about it at all in any shape or form. It is contrived. It is boring. It is terrible. Everything about it is like speaking down to children. Like, you're not respecting their intelligence in any way. They over-explain everything, even though you should already understand what's happening.
Right.
And I fucking hate it. So, yeah. That movie will make you like the first three a lot more. So, if you didn't think you liked the first three, watch the fourth.
You will reevaluate your life choices.
You'll reevaluate how good they are. Because at least those ones don't really talk down to you all that much.
Mm.
And there's only, like, one or two fart jokes in the entire movie, unlike the fourth one where it's like every 5 seconds.
Oh my god, that sounds horrible.
It's terrible. And then anyway, Agent Cody Banks, 1 and 2. 2, I think, is better than 1.
Is Hilary Duff in both of them?
She's in 1.
That's what I thought.
He ends up with her at the end. She's not in the second because she was like in too many movies apparently at the time.
Girl was booked and busy.
Yeah, yeah, she really was. Also a killer soundtrack. Second one's just more fun because it's so much more ridiculous.
Mm.
It becomes more fun. But like the first one's still fantastic. I don't know what it was about kids movies and making you want to be a spy for the government. Where I'm like, yo, Agent Cody Banks, I'm like, sign me up, CIA. I will do your dirty work for you. I get a fucking rocket skateboard and shit. I'm in. I'll commit war crimes for you.
7-year-old Mike, like, hey, what's up?
Yeah, dude, I'll commit the war crimes for you. Sign me up. Those movies are so stupid and so immensely fun. Yeah. Great. Also, Keith David is in them.
Who's that?
Keith David.
Should I know who that is?
On that note.
Should I?
Thanks for watching this week's episode of the Vaguely Anime Podcast. No. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, leave a review, like, follow. Cheer Cat, Cat the Moonstar on
Keith
Twitch.
David?
You have 2 weeks to watch free season 1 and 2, and also 50% off if you desire to. We will be talking about it, but it's not necessarily necessary.
Okay, I'm looking at his picture, and I still don't know.
We will talk to you guys next week for whatever it is we talk about. Goodbye.
Okay, bye.